It was unusual for a unit briefing to take place at a stately manor overlooking Ullswater in the Lake District, and it was even more unusual for the Brigadier and his senior staff to attend a briefing in plain clothes. Sir John Sudbury had been kind enough to offer up his home for this particular meeting, and decided to take an overdue vacation with his family to the Scottish Highlands. The Brigadier stood near the fireplace, holding a dossier. Seated in the parlour were Captain Mike Yates, Sergeant John Benton, Corporal Carol Bell, Sergeant Tom Osgood, and unit's former scientific advisor, Dr. Elizabeth Shaw. The Brigadier cleared his throat and reminded everyone that the briefing was classified before he passed around dossiers. "Lovely as it is to see everyone," Liz Shaw began, "may I ask why we're all here?" The Brigadier got straight to the point. "Unit Soviet branch reports that rogue KGB agents calling themselves Novi Zakhavi kidnapped two scientists working on a biological weapon project and are holding them captive in London." Mike Yates thumbed through pictures in his dossier. "Professor Malcolm Raynaud and Dr. Amanjo Chandrasekhar," he said with a raised eyebrow. These were researchers that Liz Shaw had mentioned to him in the past, as well versed in all biological warfare, past and present, an asset to whoever would employ them.
"We have been ordered," the Brigadier continued, "to infiltrate the Novi Zakhash safe house and rescue the scientists."
The others looked at each other, perplexed. "Surely this is a job for the police or the regular army," Mike suggested.
"Normally it would be, Captain," the Brigadier admitted. "But plans for the bioweapon were borrowed from Sir John's private collection, and the UN doesn't want anyone to discover that the project originated from alien schematics."
"Alien schematics?" Mike asked with surprise. The Brigadier turned back a page in his dossier.
"The schematics were outlined on parchment scrolls written in a Turkic dialect dating back to the 13th century, excavated from the Bulgarian cavern Devakatasar in the 1950s.
He read aloud.
"Hold on," Benton interrupted. "Sir, scrolls using a dead language from the 13th century contain information on alien weaponry?"
The Brigadier remained stone-faced.
"According to Sir John, the author of the scrolls was a perennial philosopher known as the Hoja."
Corporal Bell tried to recall a sixth-form class she once took on Eastern European folklore. "Nasreddin Hoja was a fictional character, wasn't he?" Liz remembered Unit's occasional scientific advisor once telling her that the Hoja was one of his own people. "Legendary, perhaps, but not fictional," she stated matter-of-factly. Mike was confused.
"Well, who translated the scrolls after they were excavated?"
The Brigadier paused, looked at Liz and finally replied,
"Miss Shaw's mother."
Liz lowered her head and moved about in her seat uncomfortably. Mike, Benton, Bell and Osgood stared at her incredulously.
"Dame Emily Shaw is an accomplished archaeologist specialising in decipherment,"
the Brigadier explained. "With respect to this biological weapons project," Liz began, in order to redirect the conversation, "how much did the Novi Zakhash agent already know after interrogating Raynaud and Chandrasekhar?" The Brigadier twitched his moustache.
"Details are scarce, but it is believed that neither has given them any information."
Benton flipped through the pictures in his dossier.
"Who is this Professor Adelise Jarstell?" he asked. "She looks rather like you, Miss Shaw."
Liz studied the picture of Professor Jarstell and smiled.
"Yes, I suppose she does."
"Fortunately," the Brigadier explained, "Professor Jarstell was taken to a safe house before the kidnappers could get to her."
"Why these three scientists, sir?" Corporal Bell asked.
"They were chosen based on their specific fields of expertise," the Brigadier replied.
"Separately, so none of the three can speak about the work of the other two," Mike realised, looking as though a light bulb had burst over his head.
"Precisely," the Brigadier confirmed. After a short pause, he added, "The project's mission is to create a new species to be used as a biological weapon on the battlefield."
Liz started tapping her pencil lightly on the table as she considered the possibilities between all three scientists. "Tell us about this new species, Brigadier."
"Raynaud, Chandrasekhar and Jarsdale are calling them Xongtongs, based on Dame Emily's translation of the scrolls," the Brigadier replied. "They're parasitic airborne contagions, which enter their human host bodies as tiny grey spores, and pass to healthy individuals from infected hosts through coughing and sneezing, much like the common cold."
"So they're contagious spores," Liz clarified. "So they would be difficult to contain should they infect the wrong people." The Brigadier nodded in agreement as he continued to read through his dossier.
Once inside the human host, the Xongtong spores attach themselves to the spinal cord, and from there they grow tentacles and weave themselves through the spinal column until they make their way to the brain stem.
Mike flinched. The Brigadier continued.
Neural cortices grow inside the host brains, eventually giving the Xongtongs complete control over the host behavior.
Carol Bell gasped in horror.
During growth, the Xongtongs have specific tentacles that attach to the bloodstream and filter nutrients out, much like an umbilical cord does for a fetus.
Mike, Liz, Benton, Bell, and Osgood looked at each other with bewilderment.
This type of project is insane, Benton insisted.
That's irrelevant to our mission, Sergeant, the Brigadier pointed out.
Liz dropped her dossier on a table and stood up. Presumably I'm supposed to play the part of Professor Adelise Jarsdell.
Sort of,
said the Brigadier.
Jarsdell is scheduled to lecture at Queen Mary University this afternoon. Unfortunately, something has come up and you're taking her place.
At which point I will be kidnapped? Liz asked.
Yes,
the Brigadier reluctantly replied.
But we'll be sending Captain Yates with you. He'll be posing as your fiancé.
The lecture hall was filled with applause, yet Liz had virtually no idea what she had just lectured about. She was grateful the real Professor Jarsdell already had a written speech available for her to use, and that her own knowledge of many of the large scientific words in the speech covered the fact that aerobiology was not her forte. As she stepped off the stage, Mike Yates joined her, wrapping his arm around her shoulders with a proud smile before he kissed her on the side of the head. They walked together towards the exit. Viktor Kozlov, a Novi Zakaz operative, astutely watched them as they made their way out a side exit and then quietly followed them. As Liz and Mike stepped onto the pavement of Mile End Road to hail a cab, Kozlov came up behind them with a Makarov 9mm pistol and pushed the barrel into Liz's back. Kozlov nodded towards a nondescript black car.
Get in and no one will get hurt,
Kozlov demanded with a hiss. Mike and Liz both pretended to be frightened and ducked into the car. Once Kozlov was in, the door shut and locked, the car sped away. Benton and Osgood watched everything from inside the pub across the street. Benton had managed to secure a tracking device on the undercarriage of Kozlov's car during the lecture without drawing any attention to himself. While taking a drink of ale, Osgood glanced, pleased at the small device beeping quietly in his hand. Bell pulled up in an HM British Natural Gas van. As soon as Benton and Osgood saw her, they calmly got up, exited the pub, and walked over to a small door on the side of the van, where they climbed inside. Bell followed Kozlov's car from a great distance to London. Kozlov's car stopped outside the abandoned Brompton Road tube station in Knightsbridge.
Dr. Valeria Tamakin walked up to the car, pointing a Tokarev TT-30 at Liz and Mike.
Get out! Valeria instructed, waving the pistol in a sweeping motion to indicate they should get out of the car.
What is this? Mike asked.
Kozlov retrieved two black hoods from the vehicle and placed one each over Mike and Liz's heads and led them to a stairwell.
Steps, the Russian said gruffly. The four of them slowly walked down several flights of stairs and out onto the platform area, where the hoods were pulled from their heads.
Even with them removed, Liz and Mike could barely see in the dimly lit platform. Valeria waved her gun to lead them into a secure room off the platform level. Inside, the Novi Zakaz leader, Andrei Dryamov, sat behind a plain wooden desk with a telephone.
Sit down, please,
Dryamov ordered.
What's this all about? Mike asked. Where are we?
I'm so glad you could finally join us, Professor Jarsdell,
Dryamov said, addressing Liz.
Professor Jarsdell, Liz exclaimed. I am not Adelise Jarsdell. My name is Elizabeth Shaw.
Dryamov and Kozlov looked at each other with surprise.
You've made a mistake, mate, Mike asserted with a bit of a cocky smile.
Dryamov stood and walked with an aggressive gait towards Liz and Mike.
Show me your identity card,
he demanded, looming over Liz. Liz happily retrieved her ID from her purse and handed it to Dryamov. Dryamov inspected it, handed it back to Liz, then sat down behind the desk again and folded his hands in front of him.
What were you doing at Jarsdell's lecture this afternoon, Miss Shaw?
Filling in, Liz replied. Adelise has been under heavy guard ever since Professor Raynaud and Dr. Chandraskar disappeared.
Dryamov pushed the telephone across the table towards Liz.
You will have to get Professor Jarsdell here, Miss Shaw.
It's Dr. Shaw, Liz retorted. And why should I?
Because, Dryamov explained.
It might save your life,
Liz laughed. You realize, of course, that Adelise's mind has been wiped of all knowledge of Project Exongtong. The penny had dropped. Obviously, this Elizabeth Shaw person knew all about Project Exongtong.
It might interest you to know, Dr. Shaw, that we are holding Drs. Raynaud and Chandraskar here.
Liz raised her eyebrows. So you might learn how the Exongtongs integrate into the human nervous system and bloodstream, but you still won't learn a thing about how the Exongtongs are transmitted.
Dryamov narrowed his eyes. Someone will have taken over Jarstel's research, Dr. Shaw.
Mike acted nervous. Oh, Liz, don't tell him about Christopher.
Liz looked at Mike crossly.
Christopher? Dryamov asked. Who is Christopher?
Liz remained silent.
Dr. Christopher Larimore, Mike blurted out. Jarstel's assistant.
Mike! Liz shouted.
Do not be too hard on your friend, Miss Shaw, Dryamov said condescendingly. He may have just saved his own life, yours, and those of Raynaud and Chandraskar.
Liz defiantly sat down in a chair across from Dryamov and crossed her arms.
If you think I'm going to be party to handing over a dangerous biological weapon to rogue Soviets, then you're a fool.
Kozlov approached Liz and Mike, but Dryamov held his hand out to stop him.
Can we have some time to think it over? Mike asked.
Of course, Dryamov replied. Your friend has 1 hour to think it over before we start killing all four of you.
But then you'll never have the secrets to the Exongtongs, Liz blurted out.
And neither will Britain,
Dryamov countered. Liz looked up at Mike.
He means it, Liz, said Mike. If he can't have the research, no one can have it, and we're all dead.
The HM British Natural Gas van rolled to a stop outside the disused Brompton Road tube station on Cottage Place. Osgood exited the back of the van and walked over to a boarded-up storefront just north of the station. Liz and Mike were led out of the Novi Zakaz makeshift office and across the platform. Liz could vaguely see the old Brompton Road lettering on the wall tiles, despite the low lighting. Kozlov opened a door to another anteroom. Malcolm Raynaud and Amanjot Chazrakar sat on an old bunk bed behind a heavy metal cell door with a barred window. Kozlov pushed Liz and Mike inside and then slammed the cell door shut behind them. Dryamov stayed to listen to their conversation through the cell door's barred window. Liz greeted Raynaud as if they'd been good friends for years with a hug and a kiss on each cheek.
Malcolm, good to see you, she said with a reassuring smile, then muttered in his ear, we're here to help.
Mike shook Chandraskar's hand and gave him a similar greeting. Chandraskar, however, looked at Liz.
I know you, he said. You're Dr. Shaw. You work for UNIT.
Dryamov's eyes widened, but Mike tried not to react to Chandraskar's revelation.
Not anymore, Liz laughed. I resigned from UNIT and returned to my research at Cambridge 4 years ago.
Dryamov's eyes narrowed again. He was too busy eyeing Liz to notice Mike attach a small device to the cell door.
Once inside the closed shop, Osgood found the wall it shared with the old tube stop and began sketching a survey drawing with specific dimensions. Meanwhile, Benton surveyed the facade of the old station. He rubbed his forehead as he thought about how they might be able to use a microblaster to remove an 11 by 11 section of the facade without damaging the structural integrity of the old station. Bell joined Benton and suggested that they contact the National Grid for a utility schematic. Dryamov and Kozlov had left Mike in the cell with Raynaud and Chandraskar, but had decided to escort Liz back to Dryamov's makeshift office.
Liz sat across the desk from Dryamov, looking at him smugly with her arms crossed.
All right, she said, leaning forward a little bit. I'll get Dr. Larimore here for you if you make it worth my while.
Dryamov looked at Liz in disbelief.
I will kill the other three personally, Dr. Shaw, he warned.
You get Larimore and the secrets of the Exongtongs, and I get £50,000, Liz stated, laying out her terms. And Mike and I walk out of here unharmed.
Dryamov's jaw dropped.
Are you out of your mind?
I know Adelise's catchphrase, Liz explained. Christopher will think it's her summoning him here.
Surely he knows Jarstel is under guard with her memory erased,
Kozlov chimed in.
Liz looked at Kozlov defiantly. I may have resigned from UNIT, but I still have contacts there who know the right people. Neither Christopher nor any of Adelise's research team know her true whereabouts.
Dryamov took a deep breath.
Very well, Miss Shaw. £50,000.
Outside Harrod's department store, Liz and Mike stood with Dryamov and Kozlov, watching a solidly built man who walked with a confident swagger cross Brompton Road towards them in a beige suit and matching tie.
The Brigadier smiled warmly as he approached Liz and Mike.
I'm so pleased to see you both,
the Brigadier greeted them. Kozlov pushed the barrel of his pistol against the Brigadier's ribcage.
If you want to live through this, Dr. Larrymore, don't make a sound,
Dryimov ordered. Just walk ahead slowly. Kozlov and Dryimov flanked the Brigadier as they escorted him down Brompton Road towards the old tube stop.
Liz, I don't understand, said the Brigadier. What's happening?
All they want is Adelise's precious Exongtong transmission research, Christopher, Liz replied. Work with Malkin and Amonjot, and these people will let you live. Kozlov slipped Liz a strapped stack of banknotes, which she quickly stuffed into her purse, as Dryimov leaned over to Kozlov and quietly ordered him to kill both Mike and Liz once they were out of sight. Liz and Mike wished the Brigadier luck, then started to walk down the street with Kozlov close behind. With their backs to the Brigadier, Dryimov took that exact moment to cover the Brigadier's mouth with a chloroform-soaked handkerchief. The Brigadier began to fall back into Dryimov as he progressively lost consciousness. Just as Liz and Mike crossed Basel Street, Benton and Bell whisked around the corner and intercepted Kozlov. They moved him into a small space between buildings and quietly disarmed him, while Mike and Liz continued on their way, as though they were oblivious to everything going on around them. The Brigadier slowly regained consciousness. He was lying on the bottom bunk in the Brompton Road cell, with Raynot and Chandraskar staring at him. The Brigadier sat up, rubbing his temples.
What happened?
I'm afraid, Malcolm Raynot replied. We've been kidnapped, old chap.
Osgood unwound two sonic leads from a console inside the British natural gas van and attached them to some of the mortar between specific bricks on the outer facade of the old tube station. He signaled Bell to activate the console. Liz, Mike and Benton watched as the bricks and mortar began vibrating and crumbling. It's alternating between 50 and 70 cycles per second, Corporal Bell shouted from within the van. Osgood signaled Bell to shut the machine off. How many decibels do we need? Mike asked.
We're safe up to 120, sir, Osgood replied.
A successful test, Liz stated. Mike looked at his watch.
You better make that phone call, Corporal.
Corporal Bell picked up a field telephone in the van and dialed the police.
Hello, this is Miss Marlowe at British Natural Gas. We have a gas leak at 76 Cottage Place. Can you assist with evacuation?
Moments later, two City of London police response cars parked on Cottage Place outside the Brompton Road tube station. Bell, dressed as a BNG technician, helped police officers escort people who were exiting the shops and residential units just north of the station into double-decker London transport buses for evacuation. Osgood hopped out of the BNG van with a canister of a harmless perfluorocarbon tracer gas, with a sulfide odorant added to simulate natural gas. Meanwhile, Benton backed a tipper lorry up to the facade of the old tube station. A micro blaster had been used to remove a section of the wall, large enough to accommodate the tipper lorry. Osgood joined Mike, who was also dressed as a BNG technician. While Mike began connecting the tracer gas canister to the Brompton Road tube station's gas main, Osgood inserted the sonic leads from the BNG van into the mortar on the station wall. Dryimov and Valeria barged into the makeshift cell in the Brompton Road underground. Dryimov addressed the Brigadier Raynot and Chandraskar.
Have you come to a decision?
The Brigadier Raynot and Chandraskar looked at one another in silence. The Brigadier spoke first.
I think we should transcribe our research and give it to them.
Raynot and Chandraskar were aghast.
We can't give the Zongtong biotechnology to this Soviet faction,
Raynot insisted.
Besides, Chandraskar pointed out, what makes you think they'll let us live after we give it to them?
Dryimov tried to reassure them.
You have my word.
Raynot rolled his eyes, and Chandraskar shook his head in disbelief. The word of a Russian kidnapper was not something either scientist trusted with any degree of confidence. Valeria suddenly yanked out an AK-47 from behind a nearby utility door and prepared to fire on the three prisoners.
No, wait,
the Brigadier pleaded.
I'll give you Professor Jarsdale's infectivity research.
Not good enough, Dr. Larrymore,
Dryimov said coldly.
Without their research, yours is useless.
The Brigadier thought quickly.
I was seconded to Dr. Chandraskar's team once Professor Jarsdale went missing, and I can recreate nearly two-thirds of the nervous system integration research.
Chandraskar was confused.
What?
Silence,
Dryimov ordered. Dr. Valeria Tamakin lowered the machine gun and whispered in Dryimov's ear.
With Larrymore's help, we may be able to extrapolate the rest of the neurological research.
And the nutritional metabolic research?
Dryamoff asked. Valeria paused to think.
If the goal is to infect as many enemies as possible, we would still have an advantage using Exong tongues that cause enemy soldiers to fire on their own platoons. How long they live without nutrition would be irrelevant,
Dryamoff agreed. Proceed, Dr. Larrymore. Raynaud lunged at the Brigadier, knocking him off balance. Before the Brigadier could react, Raynaud was strangling him and yelling, Traitor! Over and over. Enough! Dryamoff shouted with the swipe of his hand. Valeria pulled Raynaud off the Brigadier and then forced the Brigadier into a chair at a small table. The Brigadier was just about tired of suppressing his military training, but he reminded himself that he was on a mission. Dryamoff moved his own face within inches of the Brigadier's. Now write down what you know for Dr. Tamakin. Suddenly the room began shaking. The bunk bed fell over and items on the desk rattled. Debris began falling from the ceiling. Earthquake! Raynaud warned. Benton activated the tipper lorry hydraulic system to raise the tipper, and a bed full of rocks gathered from a London area gravel quarry poured down into the depths of the Brompton Underground. Liz, who had infiltrated Brompton Road Tube Station's World War II command center, turned off the main circuit breaker to cut power to the entire platform area. Dryamoff and Valeria fumbled around in the dark, trying to open the cell door. The device Mike had placed on it earlier had activated, preventing the door from opening. Now we're all trapped, Chandraskar whined. The Brigadier chuckled to himself. You find this amusing, Dr. Larrymore? Dryamoff demanded.
I find it ironic, the Brigadier mused. We're all going to die down here. Don't you smell it?
Gas, Valeria realized. There's a leak.
The Brigadier addressed Valeria. How long do you think it'll take the gas to dispel all the air in here?
Valeria looked around the cell.
This room is about 4,500 cubic feet, so I estimate about 25 minutes.
That should be long enough, Dryamoff reckoned. There should be crews digging for us about now.
In an abandoned tube stop,
Raynaud blurted.
It'll depend on how much damage the earthquake caused, the Brigadier pointed out.
Does anyone have a radio? Valeria suggested. The Brigadier indicated that he had one. From within the BNG van, Belle prepared to speak into her field telephone, which was tuned to the precise frequency the Brigadier had on his radio receiver. At 1700 hours GMT today, London suffered its worst earthquake since 1750, Belle announced like a newsreader. It is reported that a wall of flames is moving up into the Knightsbridge area, hampering rescue efforts. The Brigadier, Raynaud, Chandraskar, Dryamoff and Valeria listened to Belle's words over the Brigadier's radio. Fire and rescue services, as well as the armed forces, have been dispatched. Officials report that heat from the fires has raised surface temperatures to 403 degrees Celsius.
It's getting worse, the Brigadier stated. Obviously no one is trying to dig us out of here, so we'll have to do it ourselves.
Dryamoff and Valeria fired a barrage of bullets from their respective weapons until a small hole appeared in one of the walls. Then they forced the Brigadier, Raynaud and Chandraskar to remove more of the cinder blocks by hand. Once a hole was large enough for someone to climb through, Dryamoff climbed through first, while Valeria held the others back at gunpoint. As soon as Valeria had joined Dryamoff on the other side of the wall, they were pummeled by the falling rocks Benton had dumped down the shaft moments earlier. The Brigadier climbed through to check for life signs, but both Novi Zakaz operatives were dead. The Brigadier returned to the cell to join the others. He picked up his radio and pressed a hidden button on it to use as a field phone.
Greyhound leader to trap one and Acorn. Release us.
All of a sudden, the cell door opened and the lights came back on. The Brigadier told the others his real name and explained that he worked for UNIT.
Thank goodness,
Raynaud said in relief. Chandraskar vigorously shook the Brigadier's hand. Above ground on Cottage Place, police officers were still busy escorting nearby residents into the remaining London Transport buses. Bell had moved the BNG van in front of the big hole in the wall of the Brompton station, and Benton had managed to force the lock off the main door to the station so that the Brigadier, Raynaud, Chandraskar and Liz could escape. Mike opened the back doors to the van so that the others could climb inside. As soon as the unit team members and the two scientists were inside, Mike closed the doors and the van sped away. That night at Unit HQ, the Brigadier, Liz, Mike, Benton, Bell and Osgood had reconvened in the Brigadier's outer office. The unit soldiers wore their customary uniforms.
I'm happy to report that Drs. Raynaud and Chandraskar have been reunited with their families, the Brigadier told the others. Sir John wishes to convey his thanks to us.
And Professor Jarsdale? Mike inquired.
She and the others will be given new identities and will be relocated separately for their own protection, the Brigadier replied.
Wait a minute, Benton interjected. What about the 50,000 quid Miss Shaw extorted from Dryamoff?
I'm donating it to St. Joseph's Hospice in honour of my late fiancé, Ben, Liz revealed.
Mike was surprised. He never knew Liz had been engaged.
And what of the future of Project Exongtong, sir? Bell asked.
The Brigadier frowned.
Geneva wants to proceed with the project at some point.
Liz, Mike, Benton, Bell and Osgood all stared at the Brigadier in disbelief.
Sir John, however, is backing my petition to the UN to abandon the project, the Brigadier stated, and Kozlov is willing to testify to the Security Council.
Good, Liz stated firmly. Extraterrestrial philosophers aside, that project was poorly conceived and completely devoid of any humanitarian concerns.
And, the Brigadier added, it goes against the principles of the Geneva Convention.
So I suppose the Exongtongs will never come to fruition, Mike said reassuringly.
Meanwhile, at a secret laboratory in Brussels, a technician placed a specimen container in a cryogenic freezer. The label on the container was clearly marked Exongtong Spore.